We are going to introduce our other guest to you now. We're going to talk about where we are now. We've had this interesting discussion about where we were, what leads up to today. We are joined here now, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg, as a Democrat, a Maryland State Delegate from the 41st District here in Baltimore City, and Vice Chair of the Ways and Means Committee joins us, along with Kristen Rowe Finkbeiner, who is Executive Director, CEO, and co-founder of Mom Rising, and host of Mom Rising Radio with Kristen Finkbeiner, co-author of The Motherhood Manifesto. And Brian Griffiths, who is co-founder of Red Maryland, chair of the Maryland Young Republicans, and the Northeast Regional Vice Chair of the Young Republican National Federation. And in a moment, we'll also be joined by Delegate Michael Smigel Sr., who is Republican State Delegate from District 36, Caroline, Cecil, Kent, and Queen Anne's County, and the House Minority Parliamentarian. And folks, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Good to be back, Mark.
And folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to one of our two Facebook pages, Mark Steiner or The Mark Steiner Show, and throw your comments on there. I'll be looking to see what you're writing about all of this and gun control and where you stand, what you think. We've had some interesting comments so far that I will read as we go. So I'm curious what all your takes are. Brian Griffiths, I'll start with you. Michael Smigel should be here in a few minutes, I hope. So your take on what's happened in New York, what might be happening in Maryland, we're not sure of all the details yet, but we'll hear more from Sandy Rosenberg, what he thinks they might be, and what President Barack Obama talked about today. Brian?
Well, so far, I mean, all that I've seen are legislative proposals and changes that would not actually eliminate anything, other than impede the ability for law-abiding citizens to own firearms. Adam Lanza in the Newtown shooting didn't acquire his firearms legally. The criminal, the shooter in the Webster, New York shooting didn't obtain his firearms legally. Nothing that has been proposed so far is actually going to solve crime. All it is doing is providing additional restrictions and additional layers of bureaucracy and red tape for law-abiding citizens to carry firearms. What it tells me right now is that both Governor Cuomo in New York, Governor O'Malley, and the president are not actually serious about fixing any problems. They just want to score political points and try to take on the gun industry and try to take on the rights of law-abiding citizens. And it's a shame that that the Democrats have proven so far to be totally unserious about stopping violent gun crime.
Sandy Rosenberg.
I disagree. And I think the American public disagrees. We're talking about reasonable, constitutional limitations on possession of certain firearms. And I think as we legislate on this issue in Maryland, in New York, in the Congress, we'll do what a legislature always does, which is try to balance interests. And I come down on the side, and I think most people do, of a reasonable regulation on individual rights, which Justice Scalia recognizes in the Heller opinion, is constitutional. Justice Scalia wrote, "Nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places, such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms."
So we also are joined here by Delegate Michael Smigel, who just came on the phone, House Minority Parliamentarian from District 36. On the Eastern Shore. Michael, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're with us. But you heard a bit what Sandy was saying, right?
I get an opportunity because Sandy invites me every year to go to his law school class, and we debate this issue every year.
Well, why don't you come back on now, and then we'll go to our next guest.
Okay.
Your thoughts on what Sandy was just saying, and then we'll get into some specifics.
Here's the thing, that the reasonable restrictions should be, first place the restrictions that are rather going to do the most good, and that's on those who are committing crimes. Why there is not one single law being proposed that will do anything to stop the bad guys from getting guns or using guns. It will only place impediments on law-abiding citizens and prevent them from being able to under the Second Amendment fully exercise their Second Amendment rights and to protect themselves and to protect others who they may be able to protect because they were armed.
Well, if I may,
go ahead,
our
Sandy.
Police chiefs, in overwhelming numbers, historically, and I assume that will be the same here with these laws, they believe that laws of this sort do help us prevent the bad guys from getting guns. And I mean, I have to give a lot of credit to chiefs of police who are dealing with the bad guys on the front line every day when they say the kinds of laws that are being proposed will make a difference.
And let me bring...
And if I can just jump in here, I mean, that just shows you the insanity of the argument that we're dealing with here with people who are trying to restrict guns. The fact that nobody actually can seriously believe that new gun laws are going to magically make criminals turn in their weapons and that criminals will continue to not obtain their weapons illegally. It is a complete fallacy, and frankly, it's insulting to the memory of those folks, you know, who died to say that a new gun law is the panacea to everything, because the folks who...
Nobody's saying it's a panacea.
It's already
the excessive rhetoric is not coming from our side.
So, you know, this is basically trying to put lipstick on a pig.
Well, let's try to kind of get... Okay. Kristen, you're on. Kristen, we haven't heard from you. I'm sorry, I don't want to leave you out of this at all. Kristen Rowe, please jump
in. Thanks for including me. I have to say I beg to differ with those guests who are saying that it will make no difference at all to increase our gun safety regulations. In fact, by reinstating a 10-round limit on ammunition magazines, which is what's being proposed in both Governor O'Malley and President Obama's specifications, would actually have limited the shooters at Newton, at Virginia Tech, at Tucson, at Aurora, at Oak Creek, and more. All of those shootings involved high-capacity magazines of more than 10 rounds. And I think it's important to take a look at what's going on in our country. I think that many of us, including myself, support the right to bear arms. But at the same time, we need to look at modern technologies. We need to look at what those arms are intended to do. And it is time to look at the fact that over 6 million people in 2012 alone were able to purchase guns without any background check at all. And you know what? When we look at polls of people, including NRA members, pretty much everybody agrees that we want universal background checks. So I don't think this is a Democrat versus Republican issue. I don't think this is a partisan sort of squabble, although it is often portrayed that way in the newspapers. I do think that we are looking at common sense solutions to increasing the safety of both children, of our communities, and having, really, we want to limit the types of arms that we have, but not limit people owning guns at all.
So let me take this piece by piece here and ask our listeners to join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com or log on to our Facebook page. Facebook page is Mark Steiner, The Mark Steiner Show, with your comments and ideas about what you think we should and should not be doing when it comes to guns and gun control. There are a lot of issues here in Baltimore City, issues around the state. They can be very different depending on where you live and your thoughts on that. We want to hear what you think should be done or not done. 410-319-8888. So let's just take, first of all, the issue I think that both Governor Martin O'Malley, Governor Cuomo at this point, and President Obama, one of the issues they are presenting to the public is that we should have much tighter, more thorough background checks, no matter where you are to buy a gun. And so, you know, that if you're going to buy it at a gun show, if you're going to buy it through a dealer, no matter how you purchase that weapon, that you have to have a thorough gun check. That's the only way to go about it. Why is that, Delegate Smigel, an anathema to some folks? Do you think
the background check?
Yeah.
Well, show me where there is anybody who lawfully owns a firearm who has created some problem because there was not a background check. We're talking about people who illegally or have mental health problems obtaining firearms. In Maryland, Maryland chooses not to report to the NCIC system those who are considered to be, and pardon the expression, but that's what they utilize, is mental defectives. There are 3 people in Maryland listed, but 100,000 in Virginia. So Maryland has set up a system that intentionally allows somebody who has a mental health problem to go to Pennsylvania or Delaware, purchase a firearm, and come back to Maryland. It would be a simple process, and I put a bill in to require it, that Maryland report through that. We have no problem with that. But there's this assumption out there without a single fact to support it that people who are law-abiding citizens who haven't had a background check are somehow committing crimes. There is no statistical proof of any of that. So you have solutions looking for problems.
Sandy?
Well, one of the reasons why the existing background checks don't do the job and screen out potential criminals or people who are going to use their guns for illegal purposes is that the laws at the federal level in particular, I believe, are riddled with loopholes. I mean, the NRA is very good at what it does. Even when a bill passes the Congress that is, you know, say like you know the Johnson bill or more recent bills, there are loopholes in it so that make enforcement very difficult, that I believe the people from the Bureau or investigators from the Federal Bureau of Tobacco and Firearms can only make an inspection once a year at any facility. So to say that the existing laws don't, even if it is true, and I don't think it is, that no one has been prevented from committing a criminal act with a gun because of the existing law with regarding background checks, the existing law is inadequate thanks to the work of the NRA in terms of the legislative process. And that's one of the things we're trying to address.
May I respond to
and
that?
And let's be blunt. I just want to add in a point here that a lot of people don't know, which is that right now many people can buy a gun online without any background check whatsoever. So the gun show loophole extends often to the Internet in ways that many people aren't aware. This means 40% of all gun purchases last year happened online in ways that there is no background check at all. And to say that a gun that didn't have a background check was not used in any crime at all, which I just heard somebody say, is absolutely preposterous in a country where we had 33 murders per day, according to the CDC.
So looking at making sure that we have
background checks for everybody is critically important, and that is one of the common sense solutions that President Obama and Governor O'Malley and Governor Cuomo are calling for. The other solution, another person actually brought up in opposition, which is looking at gun trafficking laws. Right now, we don't have a federal gun trafficking law for state to state or even for selling guns to Mexico or other international countries. And having common sense solutions to making sure that we have gun trafficking laws is important for our kids, for our communities, and it doesn't limit legal gun ownership. It's not limiting the ability for people to go out and continue hunting. I live in the West. My family does a lot of hunting. We spend a lot of time in the woods. We eat a lot of the game that's brought in. You know, there's a lot of that going around the country, and we don't want to limit gun ownership. We want to make our communities safe.
Michael, go ahead. Then I'm open the phones here.
Can I?
Michael, I said go ahead, Michael, then I'm going to open the phones.
Can you really sit here and tell me that we're going to be saying that legal gun owners are somehow responsible for trafficking to Mexico? We got Fast and Furious. The only people who have
taken firearms and
shipped those firearms to illegals that right now that we know of are the United States government, where they intentionally gave guns to the bad guys so they could make it look like those who are legal citizens and legal gun shops were allowing them to slip through to those who were illegal. This is preposterous. They got caught. They killed American citizens because our government tried to create the very situation now they're trying to point to and say, well, this is the reason we have to move.
But we're not saying that all the illegal guns in America and all the guns we're selling to Mexico were sold because of the United States government.
We're saying that the only
issue out there
is the United States government.
Where is the crisis?
Show me where the gun store. If the gun store does something illegal, they shut them down. That's what
they
the
don't
ATF
shut
does.
Them down, Michael, because
they
they're limited. The federal government is limited to one review per year.
And show me where one store has needed more than one review per year and created a problem. There was one store.
You can't show it because
Maryland.
We're not allowed to do the. There's no other instance
have
when
you
there, you're
the
limited
government
to one
say,
review
I'm sorry,
a year.
We're unable to do our job. Clearly, the gun stores are complying.
You're saying every gun store.
How do we know they're complying?
Because there's no issue with any of them selling the firearms. They're not being shut down. They're not being busted.
They're not being shut down because the NRA had the law amended to say no more than one review per year.
You got solutions without problems.
Well,
there are a lot of dead people. That's a significant
problem.
And how many people have been saved by the mere ability of people to have a firearm? You don't count those, the thousands and thousands of people.
How do we know there are thousands, though?
There are thousands.
How do we know there are thousands?
We know there are thousands.
How do we know there are thousands?
Because you can just look in the newspapers and see every day when they talk about the people who were able to have a firearm and protect themselves and to protect
their
families.
Actually, in journal reviews, and I looked it up, sadly, today.
I go through the FBI statistics.
It turns out that in academic studies, so folks who aren't Democrat or Republican or falling on partisan lines, it found that gun ownership in the house is a predictor of one thing, and that is of somebody in the home being harmed by that gun. And this is in a very sad context. The context is that in the United States of America, about 22% of women at some point in their lives will experience some type of domestic violence. And if you are a woman living in a home with a gun and are experiencing domestic violence, then academic study after academic study shows that you are likely significantly with an increased amount to be harmed by that gun. So there are actual academic studies at what happens with gun ownership in homes. Now, I am not advocating that there should not be gun ownership in homes, right? I understand and stand by the Second Amendment with the right to bear arms. But what I am doing is I'm refuting your argument that, you know, guns in homes always save lives.
Which
I heard
woman?
The word always.
Let me just jump in for a minute. I promised our listeners that at this point, and I'll let you all get right back into it, but I promised our listeners I'd let the first caller back in. Since we have all of our guests are on by phone tonight, we have one line open, so 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Marguerite, you're on the air.
Oh, wow. Well, good evening,
everyone.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Hi. Just want to say thank you for this discussion from all points of view. I think it's very necessary. I think that your authors who called in earlier had great research and good information to share, and I'm very excited about it. And one thing I wanted to say is that the conversation about saving lives a lot of times seems to get missed when it comes, you know, the business of having guns and what the purpose is. And I'm thinking of banking. Everybody has to register in order to use a banking system. But I don't feel like when I go to the bank that they're thinking that I'm going to do something fraudulent. But I feel pretty safe that if somebody does, they'll have a way to manage it. And I think it's also a deterrent on some level. Maybe not for everyone, but I think it reduces it. And so I'd just like to say thanks, and I'll continue to listen.
Thank you so much. Brian, let me go to you first, and then we'll go to Sandy.
I'm sorry, I didn't actually hear a lot of what she said. So you could
Same here. Could you repeat it or summarize it, please, Mark?
Oh, my goodness. Sorry.
It was very difficult to hear.
All right, well, we have to see if we can get these line things straightened out. I mean, I think that's the complexity of where we are with gun regulations and the question you were bringing up about what effectively protects people or doesn't protect people.
Well, could I point out one thing that they had talked about previously?
This is Michael, right?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
The woman who is the battered woman, when the husband comes to the home, who is more better protected? The one who holds up the no-contact order or the one who has a firearm to protect herself from that person coming after her? The police don't get there till after the scene.
Well, I mean,
and that's an excellent point. And that's an excellent point because, you know, when seconds count, the police are minutes away. You know, there is nothing, you know, the whole idea of hunting, of course, is a false flag when it comes to gun ownership, particularly, you know, as it relates to the fact that, you know, everybody wants to protect hunters. And you know what? That's great. Everybody, you know, hunting is fantastic. The problem is what we're talking about now are guns for self-defense. And when the criminal has a gun and or when the abusive spouse has a gun and the innocent person doesn't have a gun, it's not really a fair fight. I don't understand, and I do not understand the logic of those people who want to restrict the ability of average law-abiding citizens from protecting themselves. You know,
I just want to point out that when I shared the story about who is often harmed by guns, it was not with an intent to say no gun ownership. Go ahead, sorry. Hard to hear.
One at a time. Finish those last few words, Brian.
None of the proposals that have been proposed so far are going to actually mitigate gun crime, and all it's going to do is make it harder for average law-abiding Americans to defend themselves from the bad guys.
Go ahead.
Chiefs of police would disagree with you.
Actually, you, the police would
overwhelmingly,
the police agree with us.
They no, they do not.
Every year.
Yes, they do.
The Baltimore City Police Commissioner Bielfeld consistently testified that we needed to have better enforcement and tougher gun control laws to get guns out of the hands of bad guys. And he was not an exception.
Additional enforcement. Where was he on enforcing?
Would Delegate Rosenberg then agree with no parole, no probation for anyone who's arrested for violating a gun control law, and that they stay in jail and they do their time that they're given actual sentence? Will he agree with that?
I don't agree with no parole,
okay,
no exception.
Okay, then, well, how are we going to take care of the bad guys if they keep getting back out?
And that's one of the things that I think the Bielfeld supported was legitimate increases in the sanctions.
Well, if you give him a 10-year sentence, how's that legitimate?
Folks, we have to take a very brief break. We'll come back. Our next caller up is Charles. We'll come back to all of our guests at 410-319-8888. Don't go away. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are talking about guns and the wake of Newtown. Of course, there were legislation here, and Maryland there will be, in New York. Governor Cuomo just signed the most restrictive gun legislation in the nation the other day. President Barack Obama made his announcements today, and we're going to be talking about that. Remind you on the way back to our conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. We are joined here by Delegate Michael Smigel, Sr., Republican from District 36 on the Eastern Shore, House Minority Parliamentarian, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg, who is a Democrat from District 41 here in Baltimore City, and Vice Chair of the Ways and Means Committee. Kristen Rowe Finkbeiner is Executive Director, CEO, and co-founder of Mom Rising, and host of Mom Rising Radio with Christine Rowe Finkbeiner, and co-author of The Motherhood Manifesto. Brian Griffiths is co-founder of Red Maryland, chairman of the Maryland Young Republicans, and the Northeast Regional Vice Chairman for the Young Republican National Federation. The number here is 410-319-8888. And Charles, you're on the air.
Oh, and I appreciate the opportunity to actually speak out. I want to introduce myself as your average law-abiding citizen. Yeah, that's just me, your next-door neighbor. I wanted to make a comment about something that one of your guests said just moments ago about the ability to purchase firearms online without any kind of a background check whatsoever. That's a complete untruth. You can't purchase a firearm online unless you go from federal firearms licensed person to federal firearms licensed person. It's a requirement. It's up to the people who sell the weapons online at the various locations to ensure that they're only going to another federal firearms licensed person. We're not talking about the people who are the legal law-abiding citizens. We understand that criminals are in fact criminals. They do not obey the laws. They're going to get their hands on guns.
What happened? Charles, you still there?
Yes.
Go ahead.
They're going to get their hands on guns. But we're talking about me. We're talking about the legal law-abiding citizens who obey the laws, pay our taxes, and do the right thing. We're the ones who are being affected by these laws, not the criminals. So the comment that was made about the ability to purchase online guns without getting any kind of a background check is false. Okay, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thanks so much, Charles. Sandy, I'll let you jump in first.
Well, I think it was your other guest who supports reasonable gun control, gun limits, who made that point. So I'm sure she has the information to counter, you know, what was just said.
I do.
Take it away.
And that is
go right ahead.
That what's happening is through the gun show loophole, because of modern technologies with the internet, we're seeing a lot of gun sales through almost Craigslist type activities where we have folks who are using the gun show loophole online. And in fact, as I said before, we have 40% of all guns sold in the last year, which is 6 million guns were sold without a background check. I want to just sort of take a little moment to talk about our conversation. The conversation sort of turned into this weird sort of focus on maybe some people on this debate are saying that we shouldn't allow gun ownership at all. That is not the case. I think nobody in this conversation right now is saying that. And neither are our elected leaders. Neither is President Obama, neither is Governor O'Malley, and neither is Governor Cuomo. I want to say what they are saying. They're saying close the background check loopholes, both on the internet and on the ground. Close that gun show loophole. They're saying ban military-style assault weapons and high-capacity magazines that are used in the mass shootings that have happened in this last year. And they're saying make schools safer, deal with state-to-state gun trafficking by making federal gun trafficking statutes, and increase access to mental health services. All of these should not be any threat to any responsible gun owner. Responsible gun owners are not going to be thwarted in what they're using their gun for, either personal safety, hunting, or other things, by those provisions. Those provisions are helping us keep our kids safe. Those provisions are helping us keep our families safe. And there are many, I believe hundreds, of police organizations across the country who are also supporting those provisions.
Buck, if I could just jump in here and actually introduce some facts into the conversation.
Let me ask you, please, to do it. Brian, you know, I respect you a great deal. That's why I love you having on the show. But we'll do this with respect for everybody else, because I think
I'm sorry. I mean, there's a point where it just gets to be ridiculous, and I'm sorry, but, you know.
What if I said that wasn't factual?
Military assault weapons are illegal and have been illegal since 1934. The guns that we're talking about are guns that are being made illegal not because of their capacity and not because of their power, but because they may have a bayonet stock or because they may have a pistol grip. We're talking about laws that don't even make sense when they are compared to, you know, we're going to ban one type of weapon because it has one type of grip, and if you replace it with plastic and instead replace it with wood, it makes it legal. The laws don't make any sense. And furthermore, you know, we talk about banning, quote, military-style assault weapons, though nobody, you know, most people cannot actually define what an assault weapon is. But when you look at the instance of the Newtown shooting, the weapon was not a military-style assault weapon. It was four handguns that were stolen. I don't understand why you know, this goes back to the idea that you never let an opportunity go to waste. And that's unfortunately what I think, you know, the politicians are doing with this situation.
Well, let me just throw a question here, though, before we go back to the phones here. I mean, what you just said in response to what Kristen just said, Brian, and I'll let you respond very quickly, or Michael, and then go to Sandy, before we go to Clarence, our next caller. I mean, I know weapons. I've been firing weapons most of my life. And so we talk about it in my office all the time, and people wonder why would I like to do that? Because I enjoy it, and I used to hunt. I don't hunt anymore, but I used to hunt. And I know, what's a good Jewish boy hunting? Because he liked it. Goodwill hunting. but the reality is that what we're talking about here are limiting the ability to not when we talk, we don't sell automatic weapons in America. We sell weapons that have clips that can fire rapidly.
Magazines, but
and so the question is, why do we need those? Why shouldn't we limit? We're not talking about gun stocks and all the rest. People are talking about limiting the amount of bullets that can be inside of a magazine that shoot bullets rapidly. So the question is beyond kind of target practice and shooting cans and shooting things next to trees in the country. Why do you need a clip like that? Why shouldn't we ban those weapons that have killed lots of people in this country, Brian?
Lots of weapons have killed lots of people.
Just deal with what I've asked you.
But that's not the point. The point that I'm making is, under the logic that you have described, we should ban fists and we should ban.
No, that's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Mark, listen to me. The guns that were banned in New York killed fewer people last year than knives did. I mean, so if you want to start going, if you wanted that to be your standard, then we have a lot of things.
Those knives did not mow down 24 children in Newtown, Connecticut, or mow down people in Aurora, Colorado, or mow down people on campuses or on military bases when people went off.
And in Newtown, Connecticut, neither did a quote assault rifle.
He had one.
He did not have one.
He did have one. The kids were shot.
was in the trunk of a car.
Right. And he had one.
It wasn't pulled out.
But it was not pulled out and it was not used.
And so they're saying handguns.
And it was still obtained illegally.
Okay, let me do this.
Which again, I have to point out, none of the laws that are being proposed would have stopped any of these tragedies.
Nor will they stop them tomorrow.
It would have limited the mayhem, the absolute god-awful mayhem that he was able to perpetrate because of the magazines.
Sandy, finish what you're saying, then we'll go to Michael, and we'll go to the phones.
Clearly, I mean, the magazines that he used enabled him to pump all the ammunition into these defenseless 6- and 7-year-olds.
When a drunk driver takes a car and drives into
you're against any limitation on magazines.
When a drunk driver takes a car and drives to a crowd of people, do you go to all the people who've never taken their car and take their cars away because they go fast?
But the question is, I think Sandy was just asking, are you then, Michael, against any limitation on the size of magazines?
The Constitution is not negotiable.
No. I didn't ask that question.
It does not protect magazines.
Can I
not
answer?
Even Scalia
I did not interrupt you while you were speaking. Please let me speak. The Constitution is not negotiable, okay?
But what?
And why is the government? Why does the government get to tell us what we need? The government doesn't determine our needs. The government serves our needs.
But what does the government say about magazines?
And
the Second Amendment
here?
Does not
you know what,
prohibit
the bad
regulation
guy,
of
when you outlaw
magazines.
These, the only person you think the police are going to say, okay, now you can only have a 10-round magazine. Are the police going to go to 10-round magazines? No, they're going to keep 20 and 30-round magazines. You know why? Because the bad guys are going to have them. So all you're going to do is take away from the legal citizen who goes out and purchases their firearm. I have several firearms that would take magazines that are medium capacity, not large, because the large capacity is 150 or 200 rounds, and you just put a tag on it that says it's a large capacity, but it's not. And these are used. So when the bad guys come to your house, it may not always come in one person. And when you are under pressure, not everybody is a marksman. So a lady just used a revolver and shot a man 5 times in the face, and he walked away, got in a car, and drove away. So you want to limit her to being able to protect her child by saying that if there were 2 or 3 people, that she and her child are going to have to go. It's not your determination. Okay. If the police can't be there,
I
need to protect my life or the life of others I love, that's for me to decide. I'm a law-abiding citizen, and you should not pass laws that interfere with my right to go through the Constitution and protect myself.
Christian, and then we'll go open the phones.
I have a question. Thank you. And my question is, well, how far would you take this? So we say in our country that individuals cannot own nuclear arms, but our government can. We say that individuals can't own chemical weapons, but our government can. We say our individuals can't own bazookas or automatic weapons. Now, looking at how assault weapons with high-capacity magazines, and I will agree with you that there have been huge definition problems around the word assault weapon. So I think what we're really focusing on here are the high-capacity magazines, which have one important reason for being there, and you named it. It's to mow down a lot of people or one person quickly. Do we want that in our communities? Do we want that near our schools? And study after study show that when we have that type of gun around, actually more people get shot. And importantly, look at what's happened when we have untrained and even trained people shooting in chaotic situations. We have a lot of innocent bystanders who are taken down also by that type of high-capacity magazine shooting. And so where would you put the limit? Do you want to be able to
own
your arms?
One at a time, Michael. Finish, Kristen, what you were saying.
Oh, I was saying, does he want to be able to own nuclear arms? I mean, where is the limit here? He's saying he wants, you know, kind of to own anything in order to protect himself. But where is the limit?
Ask the people of Louisiana after Katrina who were left to be victims of gangs roaming through the streets when the police ran after Katrina whether they would have liked to have a round that might have had magazine that would hold 30 rounds to keep those gangs from coming to their house.
Let me, as I promised, let me go to the phones here because a lot of people, many people in Louisiana were also victims of the police who had and not just roaming gangs, but 410-319-8888 is the number here, which I hate to say, but it's true. Clarence, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Steiner. It sure is convenient sometimes to use the Constitution as a reason not to evolve into a more saner society. You know, my question is, two questions, really. Does it really make a difference whether I have one 100-round clip or a vest with 10 round clips in it when I can change that magazine in 2 seconds? And also, why do private citizens need to have weapons capable of holding at bay our law enforcement or even our military, as was done in California maybe 15, 20 years ago, where those two men in body armor used automatic weapons to rob a bank and then walk down the street? Why, to your guests, particularly I can't think of his name, do people need to have that kind of firepower that can hold law enforcement at bay? Thank you.
All right, well, Brian, either Brian or Michael, can I respond to him first, and we'll go to...
I think obviously law-abiding was probably a loose description of that term. I mean, if somebody's going to commit a crime with a weapon, they're no longer law-abiding. I mean, so I think that's...
But you know, but that's not the spirit of what he was saying. Answer the spirit of his question.
I think the spirit of the question is exactly what Delegate Smeagol was saying. We have the ability to defend ourselves. Look, as much as it's not a sexy thing to say anymore, the fact of the matter is that the Second Amendment was put in there by the Founding Fathers not to protect hunting, not to protect the ability to defend yourself from a criminal, but the ability to protect the nation from to protect yourself from the government. Now, obviously, you know what Kristen was saying about nuclear weapons; those are banned, and nobody is advocating for that. And I don't think it's a fair assessment to try to confuse the two issues. But we should have the ability to defend ourselves, our property, and our families from harm. And whether that's the bad guys or tyranny, you know, that's what it's there for. And, you know, the idea that we can't have these weapons because guns have, quote, evolved, it's, you know, we don't get to interpret the Constitution like that. Under that logic, the Third Amendment, the First Amendment, lots of amendments would have not evolved over the years.
We entrust the Supreme Court as the ultimate arbiter of what the Constitution means. And if I can quote from Justice Scalia again in Heller, where the court struck down a restriction on gun possession in the District of Columbia. Justice Scalia wrote, "The law was understood to mean that the Second Amendment, quote, was not a right to keep and carry any weapon whatsoever, in any manner whatsoever, and for whatever purpose." So you cannot read that language as providing a constitutional protection for magazines. No way. That's Justice Scalia.
Can I respond?
Or the majority.
Can I respond?
Well, let him finish first, Michael.
I'm done.
Okay, Michael, go ahead.
There is no justice. There is no executive. There is no legislature that can change what the Second Amendment in the Constitution gives us. That comes from nature and nature's God, and our Constitution merely acknowledges that. The government does not give us the right of the Second Amendment. It comes by virtue of being born.
But,
and
Michael,
millions,
are you saying
millions
that—
Millions believe, like I, that this is an inalienable right, just like the right of free speech, the right of association.
Which are also limited under the case law. There's not an absolute right to free speech, as you well know. So you're saying that you do not accept the interpretation of the Second Amendment by the Supreme Court.
You put no limit on the intrusions. You allow these intrusions to go until the right is eliminated, and that is where we differ.
No, but you're saying that the Supreme Court's interpretation, your interpretation of the Second Amendment as an individual, as a lawyer, as a citizen, in whatever, takes precedence over the Supreme Court's interpretation.
I'm saying those who wrote the Second Amendment and told us what the Second Amendment means, that their interpretation is what takes precedence.
Well, I
mean, no, it's your interpretation of what they wrote.
Let me,
come on, Michael, you're a lawyer. You can't get away with that.
I'm not getting away with anything. Telling you a fact.
So, gentlemen,
I'm no better than that.
My interpretation is that there are callers waiting on the line here, 410-319-8888. And Cody, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mike Steiner.
How are you?
I'm very interested, and I appreciate the history lesson, but I got two questions.
Sure.
Let's just say we extrapolate out black crime, drug related crime. How does the United States stack up against other countries. That's one part of it. Second part is I don't hear the president talking much about young black youth, young black males killing one another. All life is precious, obviously, but on this station, I expected a more broader scope of the subject. I'll hang up and listen to you.
Let me just say the latter part of your question before I actually, in terms of the international comparison, I'll go first to Christian and then other guests. But the issue of crime in our communities and of ending the murder, especially of young African American men in this country, is a constant conversation on the show. We do it all the time. And it's clearly part of this discussion, and we were going to come back to that, and we do it all the time. We'll do it next week. We'll do it this week. We'll do it every week because it's something we have to keep talking about. And part of that we'll come back to in a minute is part of that discussion is we talk about gun laws, but nobody's talking about restricting the least restrictive industry in this country. The one with the least regulation is the gun industry. We regulate everything from toothpaste to animals you buy to the jelly beans you might eat, but we don't regulate the gun industry. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But, Kristen, answer his question first.
Well, to the question of how is our current situation with pretty much anybody being able to get a gun anytime impacting families and communities, it's absolutely impacting communities across the country every day. There are, in fact, as I've said before on this show, 33 people are killed per day. That's one too many every, and not one too many, that's 33 too many every day. And we have to get to the issue of how we can make our communities safer, how we can make our children safer, how we can make sure that we're all looking out for one another in ways that don't mean that we cause more harm than good in the end. I'll tell you right now that this year I received a phone call that no parent wants to get. My kids are fine, but from the school saying the school is in lockdown. There's been a mass shooting near your school, and the gunman has fled on foot. It was one of the mass shootings that did happen this year. I live in Seattle. My kids were fine. Many people weren't fine. And when we look even just on the Moms Rising team alone, which is under 15 women, three of us received a similar type of call like that this year. That is horrible. That should happen to no mother, no father. And none of us should be hearing that about our children. And in order to advance our nation, we have to take measures. We can't sit down and do nothing. We have to take measures to close the background check loopholes, to ban military-style assault weapons, and in particular ban the high-capacity magazines, to make our schools safer, and to increase access to mental health services. These are the policies that Governor O'Malley is pushing forward, that Governor Cuomo is pushing forward, and that President Obama is pushing forward. All of these policies still stand by the Second Amendment right to bear arms. There's nothing in there about taking guns away for self-protection. There's a lot in there about protecting our communities and our kids so that no parent gets a call like I got and like many other parents have gotten in our nation.
All you will do is create more situations when you create gun-free zones. That's where the people who have mental problems and have access illegally to firearms go. So the more you do to inhibit people who are legal, law-abiding citizens who are trained to carry a firearm and to be able to protect themselves and others from being able to do so, you create the very situation you tell us you fear.
Now, one thing I want to ask is, in those provisions, nowhere in there did I say anything or have any of the elected leaders that I've been talking about said anything about creating gun-free zones. I mean, really what's frustrating about this conversation is that I actually think we have a lot in common. We all believe that children should be safe. We all believe our communities should be safe. And I think we all believe in responsible gun ownership. And so extrapolating out that I was talking about gun-free zones when I wasn't. I was talking
about limiting
high-capacity magazines.
Are guns allowed at that school
that
you were talking about? No. You know why? Because when we have adults gathered in a court or a county building, we put armed adults at the building to guard them when there's no guns allowed. But yet we put our children in a situation where there's no guns allowed and nobody to guard them. What sense does that make? When the wolf comes to the door, there's no sheepdog to guard the sheep. And what you're doing is creating situations where adults and parents and police officers can't take their firearm there to protect them. And so
we should have everybody walking through our schools with guns?
No, but there should not be a sign out saying, here's children who are unguarded, come get them. And by the way, we won't allow anybody in the area to have a firearm to protect them. You set them up for failure.
I mean, in simple.
But I will point out, I was not, again, talking about gun-free zones. So this is the frustrating part of the conversation.
Excuse me, I asked you, did the school allow firearms?
Right. Michael, let her finish. This in radio, it's very difficult to hear one another when there's this talking
top,
all right?
You're correct, sir.
Kristen.
Oh, I was saying, I just want to point out again that I wasn't talking about gun-free zones. I was talking about limiting high-capacity magazines so that folks who may come into a school or another area where there aren't typically other guns cannot take down a lot of people, a lot of children, in a short period of time. We don't want weapons with the sole purpose of taking out a lot of people at the same time around our children. Enough said. That's common sense.
There are plenty of responsible gun owners. We have about a minute left, Michael, so why don't you can jump in. Go ahead. Literally a minute.
What possibly makes you think that when you outlaw capacity magazines of 30 or more, or 30 or 20, that the bad guy going there is going to bring a 10-round magazine? What makes you think he is the one who's going to listen? All you're taking him away from is the law-abiding citizen. The bad guy will still have the 30 round. The bad guy will still have
We have to really take a break here, and I'll say we'll come back to the subject in the coming weeks, continue this conversation going, and we're going to be looking at the gun industry and whether it is under or over-regulated, and where do this proliferation of guns come from in America. And we'll be tackling all that in the coming weeks as well. I want to thank our guests, Delegate Michael Smigel from the District 36, House Minority Parliamentarian, Delegate Sandy Rosenberg from District 41, who's Vice Chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, Kristen Rowe Finkbeiner, Executive Director, CEO, and co-founder of Mom Rising and host Mom Rising Radio, and co-author of the Mother Manifesto, and Brian Griffiths, co-founder of Red Maryland, Chair of the Maryland Young Republicans, also the Northeast Regional Vice Chairman of the Young Republican National Federation. And thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you all. We're going to take a brief break, and we're going to talk about a different kind of violence. It's on the field. Hopefully no one dies. Football. Ravens. We'll be right back.